Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 27th of August 2024. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Ali Proven and Diane Sider and recorded at home by Ali Proven and Ralph Weirs. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 6:09 a.m. and sunset is at 8:02 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on August the 27th in history. In 1776, during the American Revolution, British forces under General William Howe defeated George Washington and the American Continental Army in the Battle of Long Island. In 1896, Britain defeated Zanzibar in a 38-minute war, which lasted from 9:02 a.m. to 9:40 a.m. It is the shortest recorded war in history. In 1955, the Guinness Book of World Records was first published. The idea came about in the early 1950s when Sir Hugh Beaver, managing director of the Guinness Brewery, attending a shooting party at which there was an argument about the fastest game bird in Europe. In 1954, Sir Hugh had the idea for a Guinness promotion based on the idea of settling pub arguments and invited the twins Norris and Ross McWhirter to compile a book of facts and figures. In 1964, Walt Disney's musical film Mary Poppins, starring Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke, premiered at Grauman's Chinese Theatre in Los Angeles, California. In 1979, Lord Louis Mountbatten, 1st Earl Mountbatten of Burma, was assassinated by members of the Provisional Irish Republican Army, who placed a bomb on his boat in Donegal Bay, Ireland. Born on this day, in 1839, Emery Upton, Brevet Major General of the Union Army and one of the most influential military thinkers to emerge from the Civil War, was born in Batavia, New York. Upton's tactics of swiftly advancing on entrenched troops would later be used in the First World War. In 1877, the Honourable Charles Stuart Rolls, English motor manufacturer, was born in London. In 1906, he formed a partnership with Henry Royce to manufacture luxury cars. He was also a keen aviator, being the first to fly non-stop across the English Channel and back in 1910. Later that year, he was the first Briton to be killed in an aeronautical accident with a powered aircraft when the tail of his right flyer broke off during a flying display in Bournemouth. He was aged just 32. In 1896, Leon Theremin, Russian electronic musical instruments inventor, was born in St. Petersburg. Theremin was most famous for his invention of the theremin, one of the first electronic musical instruments and the first to be mass-produced. He also worked on early television research. His secret listening device, The Thing, hung for 7 years in plain view in the United States Ambassador's Moscow office and enabled Soviet agents to eavesdrop on secret conversations. In 1908, Lyndon B. Johnson, often referred to as LBJ, and 36th US President from 1963 to 1969, was born in Stonewall, Texas. As Vice President, he became President following the assassination of John F. Kennedy on the 22nd of November 1963. Johnson began his presidency with near universal support, but his approval declined as the public became frustrated with both the Vietnam War and domestic unrest, including race riots in major cities and increasing crime. And deaths on this day. In 1576, Titian, Italian painter, died of the plague, aged 87 or 88. Titian was the greatest Italian Renaissance painter of the Venetian school and was recognized early in his own lifetime as a supremely talented painter. His reputation has never suffered a decline, and he was declared the sun amid small stars not only among the Italians, but all the painters of the world. In 1879, Rowland Hill, English inventor, teacher, and social reformer, died aged 84. He campaigned for a comprehensive reform of the postal system, based on the concept of prepayment, facilitating the safe, speedy, and cheap transfer of letters. Hill is usually credited with originating the basis of the modern postal service, including the invention of the first adhesive postage stamp, the penny black, which was introduced in 1840. In 1967, Brian Epstein died from an accidental overdose of brandy and barbiturates at the age of 32. He managed the Beatles and worked with Jerry and the Pacemakers, The Foremost, Billy J. Kramer, and Cilla Black. Following the news items this week, there is an invitation to the My Vision Oxfordshire Annual General Meeting, as well as details of how you can listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device. So, on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles.
A hotel in Abingdon has now been derelict for almost a decade and is continuing to deteriorate. The Upper Reaches Hotel, off Thames Street next to Abingdon Bridge, closed in 2015 and has been boarded up. The freehold of the site is owned by Vale of Whitehorse District Council, and the area occupied by the hotel buildings and its immediate surroundings is on a 125-year lease dating back to 1969. Since 2004, the lease has been held by Contemporary Hotels. In November, Friends of Abingdon Civic Society urged the owner, Amber Paul, to meet council leaders to decide its future. Mr. Paul said at the time he was prepared to spend £6 million on a hotel scheme, but only if he was granted the freehold. Daryl Jones, a member of the Friends of Abingdon Civic Society, who lives near the hotel, said, "It's incredible that it's coming up to 10 years since the hotel closed. We don't want another year of this, let alone another 10 years. The residents are caught in the middle of this standoff between the hotel owner and the council, and the site continues to deteriorate. The wall for the Abbey Stream is collapsing. We have raised this with the council and so far nothing has been done. A few weeks ago you could hear some kids who had got into the site. It's not secure. It's crazy that the building has been left to deteriorate for almost 10 years. It's having a negative impact on the whole town." Mr. Jones added, "We also raised the issue of graffiti with the council months ago, and nothing has been done." Mr. Paul closed the hotel in 2015 after it started losing £100,000 a year, and he was required to pay £60,000 to £80,000 a year to keep the site secure. The London-based businessman said in November he understood the frustration of people living near the derelict building. He added at the time, "I'm hoping the council will be more flexible. This area could be a showcase for Abingdon. I'm not running away." One possibility mentioned by Mr. Paul was a new hotel featuring about 50 bedrooms. The hotel owner said in November, "We put in a pre-application earlier this year for a 19-room boutique hotel. And then we were also going to have 10 two- and three-bedroom houses." The council did respond, but it was not extremely positive on the massing. "Then there is another scheme for a larger hotel. You need 50 rooms in a hotel to make it successful, or a mixed-use scheme. I am prepared to spend about £6 million, but I'm not going to spend that if I'm not going to get a return on it." Mr. Paul added that he would only be prepared to invest so much if he was granted the freehold to the site. The council would need to be flexible on massing, as the hotel would need a nice restaurant and function room facilities, he added.
Giant spiders, thought to be previously extinct, are making a huge comeback in the UK. But don't despair. The huge growth in numbers of the fen raft spider is actually a conservation success story. The spider was on the verge of extinction in the UK in 2010, but has thankfully made a comeback thanks to the efforts of the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. The fen raft spider's diet includes other spiders, damselflies, dragonfly larvae, and even fish and tadpoles. They are easiest to spot in grazing marsh ditches from June to September. The fen raft spider is one of the UK's rarest invertebrates, and we are proud of the role our reserves and teams have played in its recovery. Tim Strudwick, the RSPB Mid-Yarra Nature Reserve site manager, where many of the spiders are homed, told the Mail Online. These spiders have an important role in maintaining the rich aquatic diversity found in the grazing ditches on our reserves. The females are impressive in size, but also beautiful. They are truly special to see, Mr. Strudwick added. The spiders are not venomous, but are semi-aquatic and can run across the water's surface to capture their prey. Mr. Strudwick added that the spiders can also be seen at another RSPB site in Norfolk, but are fairly shy. Numbers are up to 3,750 breeding females at 12 sites in Norfolk alone. He added, walking along the meadow trail gives visitors at Strumpshaw Fen the best chance of sightings of the mature females and their glistening nursery webs. So now is the perfect time to make a trip to the reserve. RSPB ecologist Jane Sears, who was also involved in the fen raft spider conservation, told the paper, "The RSPB has played an important role in the reintroduction of these spiders and means we must continue to restore, manage and protect the wetland habitats where the fen raft spider thrives to ensure the future of not just this species, but many others too." Oxford United have paid tribute to former player Rodney Smithson, who has died aged 80. Smithson was taken on as an apprentice by Arsenal, having initially joined the Gunners as a groundsman in 1959, but was recruited to the playing staff and turned professional in October 1960. In 1964, he joined the U's, having made just two appearances for the Gunners. The right half found a home at United, though, playing 180 times and scoring 6 goals. Smithson played a key role in promotion to the second tier in 1968, and when his youth career finished, he was granted a testimonial against Swindon Town in 1975. After leaving United, Smithson went on to be player manager of Witney Town. The youths posted on social media, "All of us at Oxford United are saddened to learn of the passing of former United player Rodney Smithson at the age of 80 years old. Rodney was instrumental in Oxford promotion to the second tier in 1968. We keep his friends and family in our thoughts." St Giles Fun Fair returns to Oxford next month for its 400th year. Oxford's famous annual fun fair, which attracts thousands of visitors to the city, is returning next month for its 400th year. St Giles Fun Fair will take place on Monday, September the 9th and Tuesday, September the 10th in Oxford City Centre, celebrating its 400th year. Renowned as one of the greatest and most prodigious fairs in the country, it traditionally takes place on the Monday and Tuesday after the first Sunday post St Giles Day, 1st of September. It began as a parish festival to celebrate the feast of the patron saint, St Giles. In the 18th century, St Giles Fair was a toy fair, which then developed into a general children's fair in the early 19th century. The fun fair aspect expanded significantly during the Victorian era, influenced by advancements in transport and mechanical engineering, allowing more visitors and the development of early ride prototypes.
A group of sixth form students from Bicester have helped to rebuild a school in Kenya. 29 students from the Cooper School, armed with building tools donated by home improvement retailer Wickes and its Bicester store, travelled to Kenya to assist in renovating a school and its surrounding areas. They also helped school staff with teaching and enrichment activities for the children. The donation from Wickes, which included gloves, trowels, paintbrushes, roller sets, staple guns, staples and hand saws, was used to plaster and paint a classroom at St. Teresa's School. Suzanne Kirkwood, a teacher at Cooper School, said, "The Cooper School has just returned from an amazing trip to Kenya, and on behalf of all the students and staff that visited, we extend our heartfelt gratitude to the Wickes Bicester team for the tools that they donated to us to help with the building and renovations of the school. The donation was hugely appreciated and a lovely surprise for the community in Kenya. The donation has made a significant impact and we are incredibly grateful for this gesture." Hayley Smith, store manager at Wickes Bicester, added, "We are immensely proud to have contributed our products to support this school volunteer project in Kenya. It's wonderful to know that the tools will remain with the community, aiding them in future improvement projects."
Mansfield Road in the city centre was closed earlier this week to allow for the shooting of an upcoming film, which is filmed in the city. Parking was not allowed as the road was cordoned off by various traffic cones on Monday evening with no spaces left. One local who wished to remain anonymous told the Oxford Mail, "No parking is allowed due to a Hollywood movie being shot this week, but the security at the site wouldn't tell me what it was." Then other residents suggested that the filming was taking place at Magdalen College at the University of Oxford and that Guy Ritchie could be producing the movie. The location was correct, but it transpires that the producer is actually Hollywood megastar and former Batman George Clooney. Starring Michael Fassbender of X-Men and Inglourious Basterds fame, the film is called The Department and is based on the hit French show Le Bureau des Légendes. An anonymous source told the Oxford Mail, "The filming that happened at Magdalen College and Earth Sciences Department last week was The Department for Paramount Plus. This is starring Michael Fassbender and exec produced by George Clooney. The Paramount Plus show, which entered production back in June and will comprise 10 episodes, will have a runtime of 60 minutes per episode. It is directed by Joe Wright from scripts by Jez and John Henry Butterworth, with Mr. Clooney and Grant Heslov, who will executively produce. When the show was first confirmed, Chris McCarthy, president of CEO Showtime and MTV Entertainment Studio, said, "Joe Wright is a visionary director with a gift of focusing on intricate details to craft immersive and visually striking stories. And Jess and John Henry are masterful writers whose witty and emotionally charged language dives deep into their characters' moral complexity, while simultaneously creating a propulsive narrative. Bringing these powerhouse creatives together, alongside George Clooney and Grant Heslov, is sure to give the Bureau the reinvention it deserves." George Clooney is no stranger to Oxford, after visiting the city alongside his wife Amal in April of this year. The couple addressed the Skull World Forum in the city, which is a foundation set up in 1999, to build a sustainable world of peace and prosperity for all. He also visited the area in 2022 when he met members of the Oxford University Women's Boat Club and Oxford University Boat Club. The Hollywood actor attended their training session in Wallingford, South Oxfordshire.
The discovery of asbestos during work to upgrade Oxford Railway Station will not have a significant impact, Network Rail has confirmed. The matter was discovered last week in the ground at the nursery site on Roger Dubman Way. Network Rail says the team worked over the weekend to finish the removal, with the towpath and a sheep wash bridge reopening temporarily. A Network Rail spokesperson said, "Our teams have been demolishing the nursery so that we can use the site for the work we need to do on sheep wash bridge, which includes putting in new rail and road bridges. While the nursery building was relatively new, the ground at that location has been in use since the 1800s, when the railway was first built, and used to be part of the wider station area, which has led to a number of discoveries of materials that were previously buried. Because of the need to use this site as part of our work, the Oxfordshire Connect project has paid for the nursery to be temporarily relocated to Beckett Street car park, and the nursery building will be rebuilt after our work." When asked if it was able to provide a reopening date, a spokesperson said, "A full review of the Botley Road programme is ongoing and we'll provide an update on timescales for the next steps of the project as soon as we're able."
Chris Hackett feels privileged to be assistant coach at his hometown club, working alongside another Oxford-born figure in head coach Des Buckingham. Hackett supported the first team last season, after Buckingham was appointed in November, with that role officially becoming assistant coach and head of individual development prior to the start of the current campaign. The 41-year-old was born in Oxford and started his playing career with the Ewes, before permanent stints with Hearts, Millwall and Northampton Town. He returned to United in September 2016, managing the under-15 side, before taking over as PDP coach in December 2017. As part of his current role, Hackett will lead individual player development, both on and off the pitch, as well as easing the transition for young players from the Ewes Academy system. He said, "My passion is still helping develop younger players. I still see that as my strength and what I like doing. But that doesn't mean you can't develop the senior players as well and get that relationship with them. As long as you want to learn and improve, there's scope for that. And I've enjoyed doing that within the first team group with senior players and younger players." Hackett added, "I'm an Oxford boy and I've supported the club since my first game with my parents at the Manor as a 2 or 3 year old. It's incredible and I feel really privileged to be in the situation I'm in. The club has been my life, really. It's something I've always known and I love the city and the club. I'm really privileged to be in the position I'm in and to be working within the club." Last season, Hackett was called upon when coaching staff numbers were light, following Liam Manning's exit to Bristol City. Manning took with him his assistant Chris Hogg, plus first-team coach analyst James Krause to Ashton Gate. Now, though, alongside Buckingham in the dugout, Oxford have 2 Oxford-born members of the coaching staff leading the team in the Sky Bet Championship. Hackett said, "It's a unique club. Oxford people love Oxford United. It's a small city and everybody knows each other. Everybody is really passionate about the club. You go around the city and there is a real passion for the club, whether they go and watch them or not. To be a part of that, for myself and the manager, and understand what it means to the city, it helps. It's not just myself and the manager within the club. There are lots of people who have been in the club for a long, long time, and longer than myself. People like Johnny Edmonds are real figures within the club, and they understand what it means as well."
Electric blanket safety checks are set to be carried out across Oxfordshire this autumn. Oxfordshire County Council said residents must book the free tests in advance due to the high demand. The sessions will be held across the county on dates in September and October, with the exact location and a time slot provided at the time of booking. The Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health, Inequalities and Safety, Councillor Dr. Nathan Lay, said, "If the condition of a blanket is allowed to deteriorate, there is the possibility it could become faulty, risking injury and fire. The service has been provided free of charge to residents for 25 years and remains as valuable now as ever. In 2023, of the 769 blankets tested, over 35% failed the safety test. We therefore want to ensure that electric blankets are still safe for use. It's free to come along, and there's also free refreshments while you wait. Make sure you book as soon as you can. It is better to be safe than sorry. There will be checks in Oxford, South Oxfordshire, Charwell, West Oxfordshire and the Vale of White Horse in September, and in South Oxfordshire, Charwell, West Oxfordshire and the Vale of White Horse in October. Appointments can be booked by visiting Electric Blanket Testing, calling 01865 895 999 and choosing option 3, or by emailing duty.officer@oxfordshire.gov.uk.
A surgeon has said he will serve as a unifying figure after announcing he is running to become the next Chancellor of the University of Oxford. Professor Simon Kay has dedicated nearly 50 years to supporting medical advancements. His candidacy is focused on championing the diverse needs of the university community while preserving its esteemed heritage. Professor Kay, who is a reconstructive surgeon, has a wealth of real-world academic and business experience. As a professor of hand surgery at the University of Leeds, he led the establishment and direction of the UK's National Hand Transplantation Programme. This programme has earned international recognition as the most successful programme of its kind globally. He said, "My time at Oxford instilled in me the self-belief, discipline and ambition that have guided my varied and fulfilling career. As Chancellor, I will listen attentively to the concerns of student, alumni and staff, while upholding the traditions that make this university great. I am committed to advocating for open, inclusive and fair debate, and to working closely with Vice-Chancellor and university staff to ensure Oxford remains relevant and thriving in our rapidly changing world. I will serve as a unifying figure, truly representing the diverse perspectives of current students, faculty and alumni. With no competing obligations, I am fully committed to dedicating my time and energy exclusively to the role of Chancellor, ensuring that Oxford's future is shaped by a leader with clear focus and impartiality." He has authored many peer-reviewed papers, served as editor-in-chief of two award-winning textbooks, and helped to turn the Journal of Plastic, Reconstructive and Aesthetic Surgery into a leading international publication through his editorial leadership. He believes his international work experiences across healthcare systems in Australia, the USA, Sweden and Vietnam would serve him well as Chancellor. He added, "My career has been driven by a commitment to improving lives and advancing knowledge. I see the role of Chancellor as an opportunity to serve the university that has given me so much, and to be a proud and dedicated ambassador for its achievements and reputation." In addition to his medical and academic accomplishments, Professor Kay has served on the advisory board of the Royal Armouries Museum and as a director and trustee of the Thackeray Medical Museum. He has a wide-ranging interest in history, literature and science, and experience in public speaking and media. Professor Kay's candidacy is deeply rooted in respect for Oxford's traditions, paired with a forward-looking approach to addressing the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead for the university.
Families going through early pregnancy loss have been supported by staff at Oxford University Hospitals, OUH, Early Pregnancy Assessment Unit, EPAU. Working with Holding Hearts Baby Loss Support, a charity dedicated to helping hospitals across the UK in their support of bereaved families, OUH has been offering baby loss resources. Holding Hearts provides these resources, which include resin hearts and holders for pictures, to families grieving the loss of a baby. Jules Woodall, specialist midwife at the EPAU, said, "We're incredibly grateful to Holding Hearts for these beautiful donations. Small touches like these can really make a difference for families going through one of the most challenging times of their lives. A recent bake sale held as a thank you for Holding Hearts raised £140. Jessica Perry, the founder of Holding Hearts, said, "We're so pleased to be able to provide our memory hearts, books and scan cards to Oxford EPAU. And the response that we have already received from bereaved parents and the staff working at the unit has been great. As a small charity which relies on generous donations to stay afloat, it was such a wonderful surprise to find out about the money raised with the EPAU recent bake sale."
New student accommodation will be built for pupils at a North Oxford school, despite concern it would bring 120 bored teenagers to the neighbourhood. Applicant the Wychwood School received permission from the City Council at a planning meeting last month to introduce new housing for 120 pupils on land north of Charlbury Road near Summertown. An officer said estimated vehicle movement to the area would be low at around 18, but objectors drew on issues related to transport, among other concerns, at the meeting. A representative of the Linton Road Neighbourhood Association said, "There are no public benefits to erecting these buildings, only harm. There is a loss of availability in potential housing space, and the site is too small to build three boarding houses." The comments come as some councillors also raised concerns over the outside road being particularly busy and dangerous. The Neighbourhood Association representative also touched on the apparent lack of amenity space for pupils, such as features like a pool table, saying, "We must assume the boarders will do nothing besides homework in the evening," and referenced the negative impact of having 100 bored teenagers in the neighbourhood. But school head teacher Jane Evans also gave a speech during the meeting in which she said the Wychwood School had been part of the Oxford community since 1897, and they had listened intently throughout the planning process. Miss Evans added, "Change is the only constant in life, and the school cannot stand still. We are a member of this community too, which is why we've crafted this proposal with such care." Labour councillor and planning committee member Alex Hollingsworth suggested his biggest concerns had related to the outdoor and indoor amenity space, but that his fears had been addressed through questions. He also suggested, in relation to transport concerns, that the location was unfortunate, but not the fault of the applicant. The comments come as a number of objections had been submitted onto the Oxford City Council planning portal. Bell Broughton Road householder Elizabeth Clifton said, "Proposed access to these three Wychwood boarding houses is via the northern end of Charlbury Road, a narrow, winding residential road heavily used by cyclists on NCN Route 51, as well as by pedestrians and children accessing the two adjacent schools and nursery. Safety of all will be compromised, especially at the exit from the cycle path onto Charlbury Road at the same point as the exit from the proposed new build." Charlbury Road householder N. Clarkson added, "Whatever happens, there must not be new or more vehicle access at this small cul-de-sac of Charlbury Road." One Parsons Place householder, Mohammed Alam, said in support of the application, "As an employee of Wychwood School and a local resident, as well as the chairman of the Oxford Wellbeing Project, I have witnessed firsthand the profound impact this institution has on our community. The application was approved by councillors unanimously."
A keen wildlife photographer said he is so proud after reaching the summit of the UK's tallest mountain for charity. Reggie Joseph, who works at Middletown Grange Care Home near Whitney, reached the summit of Ben Nevis earlier this month. Mr. Joseph, who works as a home administrator at the care home in Hayley, was joined by his two sons as they climbed 4,400 feet to reach the highest point in the British Isles. He was raising money for Barchester's charitable foundation, which supports older people and other adults living with a disability or mental health problem to connect or reconnect with others in their community. Mr. Joseph said, "This was my first time taking on Ben Nevis, and I'm so proud of us for completing the fantastic achievement. We wanted to raise 1,500, and I'm so happy to say that we have surpassed that goal, which currently stands at over 1,800, and we continue to raise more funds. I'm now resting my legs for a few weeks, but also thinking about what to take on next." Care home manager Mirela Gilruvea said, "We are all so proud of Reggie for conquering Ben Nevis. He was so determined to succeed."
Concerns have been raised over the dumping of several crutches in an Oxfordshire village, amid suggestions they should be returned to the NHS. A householder near the recycling tip in Ardley, which lies just north of Bicester, noticed probably 20 pairs of crutches in an industrial bin. The concerned onlooker, who did not wish to be named, said, "Many people assume medical equipment can't be reused, but the NHS does want them back. They can be steam cleaned and reissued, so please return them if you can." A message sent out to the NHS website in relation to equipment required due to COVID-19 previously suggested the authority did want the equipment back. It said, "Much of this equipment could be recycled and reused. Please have a look around your house or the house of the people you care for." But some householders have claimed that the NHS does not always accept back equipment. Sammy Little said, "My son broke his foot in December and was given a massive black boot. When it was time to go without, I asked at the trauma clinic if they wanted it, and he said no, keep it, as they only bin them as rules changed since COVID." An Oxfordshire County Council spokesman said, "If people have an item provided to them by the NHS or other health care provider, we would advise them to contact them in the first instance about returning them. We have contacted the NHS for comment." An outdoor swimming pool in South Oxfordshire has announced it will be extending its pool season by a week. The heated outdoor pool and splash park at Riverside Park and Pools in Wallingford has officially extended its outdoor pool season until September the 8th. The pool would usually close on September the 1st, but due to the good weather and the timing of schools returning, this has been extended by a week. The announcement was made on Friday, August the 21st, in a post on Facebook. Cabinet Member for Communities at South Oxfordshire District Council and Councillor Georgina Heritage said, "I'm really pleased we can keep this popular facility at Wallingford Riverside open for longer to fit in with the good weather and to coincide with school returning. Whether you're coming for a daily swim, want to sit back and enjoy the sunshine, or splash around on the splash pad, you can now visit up until Sunday, September the 8th. The first swim of the 2024 season at the pool, which is located adjacent to the River Thames between Cromarsh, Gifford and Wallingford, took place on May the 25th.
An Oxfordshire MP has written to Cross Country as reductions in services are set to hit Oxford commuters. Labour MP for Oxford East, Annalise Dodds, shared the letter on Friday evening. This comes as Cross Country has reduced trains for 3 months to clear a backlog in driver training, which will impact Oxford commuters. The letter started by saying, "I am writing to share the frustrations and difficulties facing my constituents as a result of your recent decision to reduce timetables for 3 months across the cross-country network. Those commuting and travelling from Oxford, Banbury, Birmingham or Manchester will now have to squeeze onto much reduced services. Many cross-country passengers from Oxford have already been suffering for a prolonged period from delays, cancellations and overcrowding. I appreciate that you have acknowledged that services have fallen below the standards our passengers should expect from us. I hope that you will now take action to remedy this. Ms. Dodds said she welcomes the Transport Secretary's decision to require cross-country to agree a remedial plan. The Labour MP asked for the train company to share a letter on the plan with her.
Jeremy Clarkson has confirmed when he will open his new £1 million pub, The Windmill, to the public. In a social media post, the former Top Gear presenter, 64, also confirmed that it will have a new name. Mr. Clarkson initially thought that the historic pub in 5 acres of ground near Burford wouldn't be open to the public until 2025. However, the doors were set to open on Friday, August 23rd, just in time for August bank holiday. At the same time, the Clarkson's Farm Star has also confirmed that it will have a new name. Above a picture of a hound that looked very much like his own pet featured on Clarkson's Farm Series 4, he wrote, "The Farmer's Dog opens on Friday the 23rd of August, 12 p.m. This week, aerial photographs showed a huge 5,000 square meter marquee has been erected in the gardens, as well as outdoor tables ready at the venue, which is roughly 10 miles from his Diddley Squat farm. Mr. Clarkson has previously said he will ban noisy TVs, encourage traditional pub games, serve only British produce, and hand out a free pint of Hawkston beer to farmers. He also said it will be a place where confusing toilet signs and slot machines would not be allowed. Last week he posted on X, formerly Twitter, "There's a flagpole in the garden of my new pub, and I'm wondering what sort of flag should be flown up there." West Oxfordshire District Council and Oxfordshire District Council said they have been assisting his team over any potential traffic issues.
The Epilepsy Society has been announced as Banbury United's first major charity partner for the new season. The club will now work with the charity to raise awareness and funds for the condition that impacts more than 600,000 people in the UK. The Epilepsy Society, which was present at a charity match recently, works to transform the lives of those suffering from epilepsy through research, advocacy and care. The serious neurological condition, which affects the brain and nervous system, can cause more than 40 different types of seizure. Not all of these are physical, which is why epilepsy is classed as an invisible condition. Ellie Thornton, a patron for the charity who has sponsored and facilitated the partnership, said, "Working with Banbury United is an excellent opportunity to raise awareness of epilepsy, as well as the incredible work that the people at the Epilepsy Society do. Epilepsy is a condition that can so often be misunderstood, and I encourage people to reach out to the Society for any and all help and support."
Local Labour politicians have gone against the position of their party nationally in opposing the reopening of the controversial immigration detention centre, branding the move disappointing. The new Labour government has announced it is pledging to add 290 immigration removals beds to Campsfield House in Kidlington, just north of Oxford, and press ahead with plans to get it up and running again in a bid to achieve the highest rate of removals since 2018. This comes as the centre closed temporarily in 2018 after years of problems, including riots, escapes and complaints about conditions. Both Oxford City Council and Oxfordshire County Council have publicly opposed plans to reopen the centre since they were first proposed in 2022, along with some residents, politicians and campaign groups. Speaking to us now, Labour City Council leader Susan Brown said, "Oxford City councillors will be disappointed to hear this news. We have a very long-standing policy of opposing council houses' use as a detention centre. We were in the process of writing to government to ask them to review the previous government's plans to reopen it. We will now be writing to express our disappointment at its reopening." The comments come amid Oxford's plans to become a city of sanctuary, and as Oxfordshire County Council is also in the process of applying for this same status, Oxford East Labour MP Annalise Dodds, who is now Minister for Development, joined a demonstration against the reopening of the centre in 2017. In an interview with the Morning Star that same year, Ms Dodds had said, "Immigration detention causes real distress and anxiety for individuals and families, and I am clear that indefinite detention of people in the asylum and immigration system must end." Labour City Councillor Susanna Presell said, "I was disappointed to hear that the new Labour government is going ahead with plans to reopen Campsfield House. Asylum seekers are not criminals. Many have endured traumatic experiences. They need to be cared for in a humane way while their claims are assessed." Labour MP Sean Woodcock for Banbury in the Charwell district is one politician who has expressed his support for the government plans and says he will be meeting with Home Office officials to discuss the issue in coming weeks. Mr Woodcock added, "Britain is a tolerant and compassionate country, and we have a proud tradition of welcoming people fleeing persecution and abuse. But the system needs to be controlled and managed, and we need strong borders to maintain public confidence in it." The contract for the centre was awarded in June 2024, so it makes sense to use the facility as a measure to help us tackle this mess. But it is essential that such centres are operated properly, carefully inspected and monitored, and with residents treated with the utmost respect. The comments come as Home Secretary Yvette Cooper said new officials will work with European enforcement agencies to find every route in to smashing the criminal smuggling gangs organising dangerous boat crossings, which undermine our border security and put lives at risk. Leader of the Conservatives on Charwell Council, Eddie Rees, claimed Labour had U-turned on every conceivable policy area in the space of a few short weeks. He added, "Labour councillors have referred to Campsfield House as dehumanising refugees and have said that any move to reopen it would be inhumane. How can they honestly support a party that is looking to reopen it only a matter of weeks into government? Locally and nationally, Labour politicians say one thing in opposition and do another. At least Conservative councillors have been consistent in recent years. We have never opposed reopening Campsfield House, however difficult a decision that may be for the government." Green County Councillor Ian Middleton, of the neighbouring ward to the centre, has long opposed the reopening of Campsfield House. Mr Middleton said, "Oxford is looking to become an official city of sanctuary, so having a development like this in rural Oxfordshire seems at odds with that ambition, especially as the city council is Labour-led. Local Labour members supported my motion to the county council, condemning the previous government's proposal to reopen Campsfield, so it's a clear betrayal of that stated moral position for Yvette Cooper to press ahead with it now." Deputy Leader of the County Council, Dr. Pete Sudbury, a Green councillor, added the decision had been made without any local consultation at all. He said, "I know there is a problem for Home Secretaries as they walk into a Home Office, which has been institutionally racist for as long as I can remember. We have pretty much an elected dictatorship." Oxford Community Independence Councillor Dr. Hosni Defaro Marbini, Oxford's first migrant champion, said, "Immigration detention and its circle of violence is inhumane, ineffective, and makes a mockery of Oxford as a city of sanctuary. This detention centre is a prison. It was the site of misery and years of uncertainty for husbands, fathers and friends with the audacity to migrate and seek asylum." Liberal Democrat MP Callum Miller, the new MP for Bicester and Woodstock, said he strongly opposes the Home Office decision to reopen and expand Campsfield House. He added, "It is shocking that one of the first major decisions of this government is to reopen the facility without any local consultation."
Oxford United Women got off to a frustrating start to the season with a 3-0 defeat at home against Ipswich Town. Zuri Barrett and Leah Burridge tested Ipswich goalkeeper Natalia Negri in the first minute, while Natasha Thomas, Angela Addison and Shauna Guyatt all brought saves out of Beth Howard. A Sophie Pesquet cross from the right bounced off the far post and found its way over the line just after 20 minutes before Phoebe Poole struck the crossbar for United with a long-range effort. Just before half-time, Barrett cut inside and shot just over for the U's. Lucy O'Brien doubled the visitors' lead 7 minutes into the second half before Ipswich put the game out of sight after 55 minutes when Pesquet fired in from just outside the box.
Several powerful CCTV cameras are set to come to an Oxfordshire village on land at a centre of innovation. The UK Atomic Energy Authority has applied to South Oxfordshire District Council to introduce 22 new CCTV poles at the Cullum Science Centre in Cullum near Abingdon. These would be scattered across 10 broad locations within the 13.75 hectare site and be made up of galvanised steel. New cameras would be provided by Access Communications, which describes its technology with 32 times zoom and focus recall as powerful and offering great image quality. An applicant planning paper says in relation to the proposal, "The fundamental purpose of the CCTV cameras and poles is to promote public safety across the campus, both for employees and visitors utilising CSC. Methods of surveillance exist across the campus currently, and the delivery of further CCTV infrastructure positioned evenly across the campus will further support and enhance UKAEA's site security strategy. The nature of the proposed development is entirely in keeping with existing infrastructure on the campus, where CCTV cameras already exist, either on fences, poles, or buildings. The CCTV infrastructure will be subtle in appearance and will not emit any light or sound that would otherwise give rise to any concerns in relation to landscape and visual impact, or indeed biodiversity. Each pole would be approximately 6 metres in height and circa 11 centimetres in width, with a camera positioned on top with casing."
Oxford Cheetahs were controversially denied first place in the championship pairs, losing out to Redcar Bears. The final saw Cheetahs pair Sam Masters and Scott Nichols against Danny King and Charles Wright of Redcar. The Bears made the quicker start and were leading when Nichols came underneath Wright on the old pit's turn. Wright ran into Nichols' back wheel, with both taking a nasty tumble, and the referee decided to exclude Nichols after watching the replays, thus handing the win to the Bears. Masters said, "I think it was the wrong call personally, but that speedway, they say the guy in front has right of way, and he hit the back of Scotty, so by saying that, Charles should have been excluded. Rules are rules." Cheetahs team manager Peter Schreck added, "A throttle goes two ways. Scott was in front and Charles caught his back wheel. Scott feels a little hard done by, and I have to agree, I'm afraid. I think the wrong decision was made on that one." Glasgow Tigers topped the qualification rounds with 26 points and Oxford was second on 24. Poole Pirates and Redcar also made the semi-finals. There was some terrific action through the night, and after 18 heats of speedway, the track was slickening off, which seemed to suit the red car pair, who easily dispatched the Tigers on semi-final one. Oxford were against Poole in semi-final two and followed up their excellent away win on Wednesday by sailing through to the final.
My Vision Oxfordshire supports blind and visually impaired adults and children across Oxfordshire. My Vision's Oxfordshire Green Walks project was started after a report by Natural England, which showed that people with visual impairments and other disabilities did not access or were unable to access green and blue spaces for recreational purposes. My Vision started a 6-week pilot group in Didcot in January. Naturally, a great time to start a walking group. The objective was to find out about what obstacles were in the way of people accessing green spaces and how we can overcome them. Over the 6 weeks, the group has grown and evolved. They have now branched out to wider areas to walk around in and continue to meet on a regular basis. The next phase of the project has been expanding it to provide more visually impaired people in the county an opportunity to access green spaces. My Vision has recently started Green Walks groups in Oxford and in Abingdon. Now My Vision is branching their community engagement work into Charwell and West Oxfordshire, which will enable them to create groups in Banbury and Whitney in the near future. Andy Smith, My Vision's service delivery manager, said, "The group has gained confidence in walking and supporting each other, which has led to an increase in their well-being and a better lifestyle. At first, a 1 mile walk was a big effort, but the Green Walk group attendees now want to walk further and really enjoy their fortnightly walks, exploring different areas. Not only has the group's confidence grown in walking, but also in other aspects, such as using public transport, social interaction, and also having confidence to book onto other things such as holidays abroad, which they may not have done before. More than 2 million people in the UK are living with sight loss, and around 24,000 people in Oxfordshire are part of that statistic. With this project, My Vision Oxfordshire aims to bring the county's visually impaired population with the opportunity to access more of Oxfordshire's green spaces. For more information, please contact Mark Upton. mark.upton@myvision.org.uk or telephone 01865 725 595.
Community and voluntary organisations can apply for a £200,000 fund aimed at preventing crime and keeping communities safe. Matthew Barber, Police and Crime Commissioner for Thames Valley, opened the second round of this year's Community Fund. The fund is jointly managed by Mr. Barber and Chief Constable Jason Hogg and generated by the sale of items seized from criminals. Mr. Barber said, "I'm pleased to announce the Community Fund is once again open for applications. We are fortunate to have an active community who play a significant role in supporting Thames Valley Police to tackle local issues around crime prevention and supporting vulnerable groups in our communities. I look forward to receiving applications which focus on a broad range of areas within my recently launched Police and Crime Plan, including crime prevention, residential burglary and vehicle crime. Organisations can apply for grants to support projects that help to protect communities, people or property." Mr. Hogg said, "The Community Fund provides a biannual opportunity for community and voluntary groups to apply."
A fresh plan has been submitted to introduce new retail space to a town high street, as the applicant claims this followed an unacceptable delay. Developer Longmill Rickpost Limited is requesting Charwell District Council approves its proposal to convert premises at 39 to 40A High Street and No. 1 Horse Fair in Banbury High Street to provide 3 retail units as well as a large HMO with 23 rooms. This comes as permission had already been granted in 2021, but the proposals now need to be resubmitted after conditions attached to it were not discharged in time. An applicant planning paper says these resubmissions have become necessary due to the failure of Chilwell District Council to discharge essential conditions prior to the applications expiring. Clearly, without these conditions being charged, it was not possible to commence development works with the uncertainty of whether and when these conditions would be discharged. This unacceptable delay by Chilwell District Council in terms of discharging conditions has resulted in my client being unable to commence development and now having to resubmit these applications, causing even more delay and considerable further costs. We trust that the council will now be able to allow our client to be exempt from having to pay the planning application fee, or for this at least to be at a significantly reduced amount. There is a small lot of ground floor retail spaces to numbers 40 and 40A High Street as part of the proposal, but no loss overall of business space or residential units. Number 39 High Street, previously called the Lloyd and Stevens Building, is a Grade 2 listed building, and the whole of the site is also within the Banbury Conservation Area. The large HMO, House in Multiple Occupation, would comprise 11 single and 12 double ensuite living bedroom suites with 4 double kitchen dining areas and 2 communication outdoor amenity areas. Comments about delays to the application come as some people in the district have claimed the council has been overwhelmed as of late with a tsunami of planning applications, as described by Green Kidlington councillor Ian Middleton. An odour assessment is among the third-party reports undertaken for the job. It includes a qualitative assessment of the odour effects. It can be concluded that the proposed development is not considered to conflict with any national, regional or local planning policy in relation to operational phase odour impact on existing receptors.
An exciting new retirement estate in Wantage is offering both rental and sales options for those who want to have more flexible options. Cognatum is offering the options at the Rivas in Wantage, one of their newest retirement estates. According to Cognatum, renting on a retirement estate before deciding, to buy offers many benefits, allowing individuals to experience the community and lifestyle before making a long-term commitment. Managing Director of Cognatum, John Lavin, said, "Renting buys time for long-term decision-making, offering the opportunity to take a slower, more deliberate approach to the decision of whether to settle permanently in a particular retirement community or in a particular area, and whether that area meets priorities such as proximity to family and friends, leisure facilities and essentials such as healthcare. For those who are downsizing, a period of renting can be an attractive, flexible option. Downsizing in later life raises so many questions about the best living arrangement and location, and renting is a great way of sense-checking decisions. Living in a retirement community may involve embracing a new dynamic, and renting offers potential buyers the opportunity to decide whether this arrangement makes them feel comfortable and connected."
A Riverside cafe in Burford is being given the Michelin treatment after being taken over by award-winning chef Hugo Cosmala. The former London chef has worked with some of those considered the best in the business. He worked with chef and restaurateur Phil Howard before heading to Oxfordshire's The Sir Charles Napier, and had until recently been heading up the kitchen of the AA Rosette awarded The Swan at Swinbrook. Hubert has now set up Time and Lovage in Warwick Hall, the only cafe in Burford with a riverside view, opposite the Cotswold town's famous church. The name is a tribute to his wife's established patisserie, Hugo Lovage, which has been open on Burford's High Street since 2021. Open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day, except Sunday, Time and Lovage promises to be a welcome addition to the town. What's on the menu? Well, dishes like Cornish crab on toasted English muffin, pickled cucumber, samphire radish and Lovage oil, courgette fritter with avocado, broad beans, buffalo mozzarella, pesto and open sandwiches of smoked salmon, pickled cucumber, fennel Lovage, mayonnaise and fries. Hubert is also offering his own catering service and private chef hire. He held a demonstration at the Burford Food Festival on Monday, the 26th of August. We wanted to do something a little different and utilise the best and seasonal ingredients around, Hubert said. From our breakfasts and to our main courses, we want you to be able to taste every detail. Warwick Hall is a beautiful building and the garden is idyllic. We are very happy to open our first cafe here, and we hope that it will be enjoyed by the town's visitors, but also the residents.
The Nicaraguan Folk Mass will be performed in Oxford at the beginning of September. Oxford has been twinned with the Nicaraguan city of Leon since 1986. Organised by the Oxford-Leon Association, the Mass, sung in Spanish, we'll see singers and musicians join from far and wide. Conductor Duncan Saunderson and accordionist John Garrick will lead the proceedings. The Oxford Leon Association and Trust arranges fundraisers to aid charities in Leon, focusing on projects to support children and families experiencing poverty.
A classic car show featuring over 300 cars is returning to an Oxfordshire village next month. Blackthorn Classic Car Show will take place on Sunday, September the 1st from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. and according to the website, it will be the biggest event to date. The event will feature 350 vehicles, including classic cars, tractors and bikes, and organisers say there will be something for everyone. There will also be a variety of food vendors, including Gurkha Street Food, Sizzler's Street Food, How & Co. Fish and Chips, and Tribal Chili. Attendees will be able to enjoy the entertainment suitable for the whole family, including lawn games such as Jumbo Jenga, a bouncy castle, electric go-karting, and a rally experience. The event will be dog-friendly, and we'll have visitor parking in an additional field next to the main show field. Show cars need to arrive at the venue and be in place by 10:15 a.m. The event has proved popular in the past, with the 2016 event attracting more than 1,500 visitors. Last week, organisers announced the event had reached capacity for registered vehicles and closed applications for new ones on Sunday, August the 18th. In a post on Facebook this week, organisers urged visitors to use the bins provided at the event. They said, "This show is on a farmer's field that will have short grass. Please help us keep this clean and put litter in the bins provided."
Tickets have gone on sale for the Great Skate at Blenheim Palace, where for the first time ever, visitors will be able to skate on real ice. Taking place from November the 15th until January the 1st, the Great Skate is a covered rink set within the historic Great Court, which is part of the World Heritage Site's Christmas festivities. It also features the illuminated After Dark outdoor trail, as well as an outdoor Christmas market and a fairground. Christmas at Blenheim Palace carries on inside the palace staterooms, which are being reimagined as a Neverland adventure.
A variety of private spaces will be open to the public next month for a celebration of Oxford and its community and heritage. Organised by Oxford Preservation Trust, The annual Oxford Open Doors Weekend will take place on September the 14th and 15th. It will provide the public access to more than 100 buildings throughout the city. The weekend promises an array of talks, tours, guided walks, music, art, activities and more, all at no charge. New events are still being added to this year's programme, which is being updated on the Trust's website. There will be favourites such as tours of the Painted Room, the Trust's special place with its Elizabethan wall paintings and connections to Shakespeare, Oxford Castle and Prison and Mound and Rewley Road Fire Station will also feature at the event. The Oxford Guild of Tour Guides will lead walking tours. Oxford New Theatre will allow visitors a peek behind the curtain, revealing what goes on behind the scenes, and the University of Oxford will be opening its real tennis court. The world-famous Oxford Union Debating Chamber will also be open, along with its old library. Meanwhile, the Vishuddha Yoga Centre will offer a free class in its low-carbon building, an Oxford Preservation Trust Green Award winner. The Welcome Centre for Integrative Neuroimaging will be offering Escape the Lab, an escape room for science enthusiasts. Demonstrations, talks and activities are scheduled at the Old Road Campus Research Building, while energy-saving houses around Oxford will offer advice on maintaining house temperatures. Gargoyles and professional stone carvers will await visitors at Oxford Castle, and the air will be filled with music, courtesy of the Gaiter Medieval Band and the City of Oxford Silver Band. Over in the Hollywood Music Room, the public will be able to enjoy the Oxford International Song Festival. 80 years since the D-Day landings of World War II, Harris Manchester College will open its doors to show where planning for the historical event took place. The Commonwealth War Grave Cemetery is also opening to the public and offering talks and tours. A firm favourite is always the Oxford Colleges. Pembroke, Worcester, Exeter, Mansfield, Woolston, St John's, Magdalen, Reuben, Balliol, Historic Collection Centre, Green Templeton and New College are all taking part this year. Oxford Preservation Trust works to conserve and enhance Oxford and to help the public appreciate and enjoy its history by offering access to the city's historic places. It cares for 1,000 acres of green space in and around the city and campaigns for thoughtful planning.
AGM. The Chair and Trustees invite you to the annual general meeting of My Vision Oxfordshire on the 18th of September from 10:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Rosehill Community Centre, Carroll's Way, Oxford 0X44HF. Nominations for trustees must be made by a member by the 28th of August. The event will be recorded for those who cannot attend in person. If you would like an audio or electronic version of our accounts ahead to the meeting, please contact us on 01865725595 or email info@myvision.org.uk. You can also find our accounts online at www.myvision.org.uk/about-us/annual-accounts. These will be available 2 weeks prior to the meeting. At the meeting, there will be a vote to adopt proposed changes to our governing document, Articles of Association. These changes are mainly technical and involve modernizing the document. They will not impact My Vision's work with visually impaired people in Oxfordshire. The main changes are modernizing the wording of the objects, i.e., the purpose of the organization, increasing the limit on the number of trustees to 12, and setting term limits for trustees. There is parking in the area and the community centre can also be reached by the number 3 bus from Oxford City Centre. There will be My Vision team members to greet you and guide you upon arrival. If you have any questions regarding travel or the event, please don't hesitate to contact us. We are excited to showcase our work over the year and introduce those we have supported in this time. Please RSVP by Monday, the 16th of September.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help. That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.